This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Never mind the backstop. The buck stops here. Free broadband for everybody.
I don't know why I stemmed in that voice there.
No, you said a little bit like my grandpa.
Yeah, grandpa.
My Jewish grandpa. See, you do a very good...
Can I do it now?
Yeah.
Never mind the backstop. The buck stops here.
Yeah. My grandpa was more like this. Watcho, Johnzo. and my grandpa...
That's a bit Boris Johnson.
Yeah, no. But my grandpa, he was anything. Mm. He could do everything.
Yeah.
So I used to be on the phone. I used to bring him to work when my dad worked. I used to be on the phone and say, yeah, all right, Steve, because I'm in the band.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, should we bring the bongos? We had some percussion.
Yeah.
And my grandpa was in the background and you'd hear him go, bongos. I can play the bongos.
I think that's a bit like Boris Johnson. I think Boris Johnson could probably sort of say, yeah,
I can play bongos.
I can play bongos.
Yeah.
Listen, never mind the backstop, the buck stops here.
It does.
Boris Johnson starts his first day at work today. I hope he turned up on time.
Yeah.
We are joined now by Natasha Clark, digital Westminster correspondent for The Sun. Good morning, Natasha.
Good morning.
Good morning to you, Natasha.
Firstly, it's freezing outside, isn't it, Natasha?
Oh, it's so cold.
Oh, my gosh. It's so cold.
I know.
When's summer coming?
I know. We've got my gloshes on.
Gloshes?
The gloshes.
What are they? Big gloves?
They're big gloves, and they're gloshes. Do you know why I had that in America? It's an American term. They're gloshes.
Yeah. Anyway, listen, let's touch on Boris's speech first. What did you make of his speech?
It was a little bit hit and miss, but it was fun. It was good. We thought it showed a little bit of what it's going to be like under Boris Johnson's government. He was very keen to show he's really optimistic, isn't he? He's really fun. He's really sort of believing in Britain. And I think that's what we're going to see more of in the coming days. He's going to go, don't worry, guys, I've got this sorted. Yeah. Brexit's all going to be fine.
I think that is it with him, isn't it? We've not just got the same old person that's going to give a drab grey speech that's going to avoid... Listen, he's good at avoiding some of the serious questions, but at least there's a little bit of a... You have a little bit of a smile on your face, don't you? And it's probably what this country needs at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Boris has really sort of placed all of the emphasis on... Don't worry, it's going to be fine. Keep calm, carry on. We're Britain, we can do this.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, some may say that Theresa May was sort of not hugely realistic about sort of getting her Brexit deal through. But Boris's basically message is, we can do this if we try. I'm going to give it my all. We're Britain. We've done so many great things in the past. I'm going to go in with a fresh mindset, a fresh approach, and I'm confident that I can get some stuff done.
I'm just wondering, though. I do this with my kids. They go, Dad, what are we going to do? Blah, blah, blah. And I go, don't worry. I've got it sorted. And I'm just wondering whether Boris goes, don't worry, everybody, I've got it sorted. And he shuts the door and he goes, right, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. He's definitely not, you know, as far as he's told us anyway, he's not got a huge amount of detailed plans. We've definitely got some. But he's definitely going to be working it out in the next few days with his top team. They're all going to be sitting down. They sat down this morning at his first cabinet meeting.
I saw that.
He said to them, no ifs, no buts. We've got to get this done. It doesn't matter how. Let's thrash out the details now.
Mm.
So he's got his cabinet, Natasha. And surprise, surprise, Jeremy Hunt's not there. Do you think he was sacked? Or did he? I mean, he says he resigned, but did he get sacked?
Yeah, it's a bit of both, really, isn't it?
It's
all of it in the middle. Well, he basically was offered a different job. He was offered the job of Defence Secretary.
Yeah.
Already filled by a lady called Penny Morden.
Penny Morden, yeah.
Yeah. So Jeremy Hunt said, basically, I don't really want to... I'd rather keep my old job as Foreign Secretary.
Yeah.
Just wanted to give that to somebody else. Jeremy Hunt said, oh, sorry, I don't think I should do this anymore. And obviously, he's not alone. It was a really brutal, brutal night yesterday. We saw so many Jeremy Hunt supporters and all Theresa May supporters basically booted out the cabinet to make way for Boris Johnson's mate.
Yeah, well, let's go through them. Let's talk about Priti Patel. Now, she was sacked, wasn't she? a few years ago.
Yes, she was. Comes yeah, back. No, she's come back. I know, it's amazing. If you actually sit around long enough and wait and just talk about Brexit, you can actually be brought back into the cabinet.
It's amazing,
exactly,
isn't it?
The show, doesn't it? Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, so she was actually let go by Theresa May.
Yes.
When she was International Development Secretary. But Boris likes her so much. She's obviously a huge fan of Brexit. She's been sort of advising him on the sidelines. She's been a key part of his campaign team. So he thought, actually, you know what? Let's bring her back in the cabinet.
Yeah, she was loyal, wasn't she? Yeah.
And what about Jacob Rees-Mogg? Now, I wondered where he was going to fit in, and he's given him the leader of the House. Could he have got a different position?
We were all thinking that maybe he was going to get a job in the Treasury, that sort of maybe he was going to do sort of a junior minister job there, sort of sorting out some finances. Obviously, he supported Brexit for years and years and years. We thought maybe he could sort of get a job in the Brexit department, maybe as like a junior minister there as well. But yeah, he's decided to put him as leader of the House. That'll be a really interesting one for him. He's actually up at the dispatch box right now. Mm. So we'll be seeing him chatting away to Labour and to the opposition and sort of setting out what the House's business is going to be for the first week of Boris Johnson's new government.
Mm. But is it right that he found out via the BBC? I don't think Boris had actually found out. Jacob, that's what the report is, that he found out by the BBC.
Well, we saw a picture of him going into Downing Street last night, so I presume he would have spoken to Boris at some point.
Yeah.
It has been a long-standing supporter of Boris. He's long said that Boris is the right man for the job. I'm sure the two are exchanging texts and WhatsApps.
I bet he's WhatsApped him. With a couple of other funny ones that we're all getting at the moment.
Now, what about the man with his tongue right out, Mr. Michael Gove? Oh, he had his tongue right out.
In his red shorts.
Oh, didn't he? Michael Gove, well, it worked, didn't it? He's in, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's in charge of No Deal, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. So he's going to be Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, which is a sort of weird sort of job, which basically used to mean that you're in charge of like the estate and parliament and sort of lots of other like bits and bobs.
Yeah.
Essentially, he's going to be doing No Deal stuff.
I thought Noel Edmonds would have got that.
Getting us ready to get us ready to leave, no matter what. And obviously, Gove, he's a Brexiteer. Like I say, he's long supported us leaving in the EU. He's been in Theresa May's cabinet for a bit. He's tried to sort of work together. It's interesting that Boris has decided to keep him on. And obviously, remember, you know, what he was like a few years ago during the last leadership campaign, where he was going to run with Boris and then decided not to. So he sort of stabbed him in the back, and now Boris has sort of forgiven him, I guess.
Wow.
And who's Ben Wallace?
Oh gosh, don't ask me. I don't know.
No, not a clue, Ben Wallace.
Yeah, no one's heard of Ben Wallace.
It's a bit like a sign-in from PSG that we've never heard of, you know, that comes to a club. We make out and we go, he's a good centre forward, and then nobody's ever seen him.
He's not the only one. He's not the only one in the cabinet that I'm sure most people have never heard of.
Well, I was going to say, obviously, because a few of them have said, you know, the likes of Philip Hammond, a few of the others have said, we can't work under Boris. Did you not think that he could have maybe sort of had a chat with a few of them and you sort of twisted their wrist a bit?
He could have done, yeah, absolutely, he could have done. But equally, if he's really going to go for this, I'm actually going to leave on October the 31st, no matter what, he's really got to have a lot of people that actually agree with him and that actually sort of, you know, are really going to push for it. What's the point of having nobody that actually agrees with his plan in his cabinet?
Yeah, what gaffe did he make with the Queen? Regarding the Queen?
I don't know.
Oh, so, yes, this was a bit of a boo-boo. Yeah, so basically, it's sort of precedent that you don't talk about what you chat about with the Queen to anybody. Boris is talking to his advisors.
He's not a Trump.
Yeah, exactly. And he said already, I said to the Queen, I don't see why anybody would want the job. Which is fair enough, really, actually. I don't see why anybody... He's got a pretty tough job, hasn't he?
Do you know
but
what?
Yes, no talking about what he does about the Queen. No, Boris,
you mustn't talk about
but
it.
But it makes it a bit more real, doesn't it? And listen, people have also talked about what they said to the Queen, because Tommy Cooper once said to the Queen, can I ask you a personal question? She said, within reason, Tommy. And he said, do you like football? And she said, not really, Tommy. He said, can I have your tickets for the FA Cup final?
Wow, that's pretty brazen, but also
it's a great line.
I just wanted to ask you, what do you think... That still tickles me, that line.
A great line.
What do you think it will be? Do you think Jeremy Corbyn now will be thinking, do you know what? I was reasonably all right having a battle with with Theresa May. She wasn't the Margaret Thatcher that we thought she was going to be. She wasn't that powerful with the.
I don't think we ever thought she was going to be Margaret Thatcher.
Well, no, but there
not
was
running
bit...
through the fields of wheat.
No, but there could have been some. Now I'm thinking he's going to face Boris Johnson, who's pretty good at these battles, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think Jeremy will be thinking, actually, Boris coming into power will probably be good for him because the two are really different. Jeremy Corbyn will go, actually, Boris is pretty different. Obviously, he's going to be a difficult campaigner because we know how good Boris is on the road. We know how good he is chatting to ordinary folk. We know how sort of down-to-earth he can be. He can really connect with people. And that's sort of what Jeremy Corbyn is also quite good at. But equally, the two are really different. So actually, he's going to be going, OK, so Boris has said he's going to go for no deal. Labour have said, actually, we don't want to go for that. That will be bad for the economy. So he's really going to be able to push him and prod him and sort of say, look, I'm really different. I'm not going to do this. This is how I'm going to do things differently. And basically, he'll be able to go full guns blazing for Boris as soon as he can.
Do you think if there's a general election, he'll get voted for by the public?
Who, Boris or
Boris? Boris.
I think Boris is really able to connect with voters on a level. I feel like
I think he would do, wouldn't he?
Yeah, and I think that is going to be Boris's real strength. We saw that when he was Mayor of London. We saw that he was really good at talking to people. We saw that he was really down to earth and he could talk to people, even though, of course, he comes from a posh background. He's been to Eton, he's been to Oxford. He doesn't seem like a man of the people. But a bit like Nigel Farage, he sort of is able to connect with people on a way that other politicians maybe can't do.
Mm. And yeah, there's obviously, like we say, there's a little bit of a comedy element to it. And some people will say, oh, it's just a joke, but... it does seem to me like he is a doer. The only thing that worries me, I did see an interview of him a couple of years ago where he had his aides around him and they were sort of supplying him with facts and figures and he was trying to answer a few questions and he kept getting it wrong and it was almost like...
He's not a details man, is he, Boris?
No, he's not.
To be fair, neither am I. If you ask me, you know, how much is this, how much is that, how much is this going to cost, I wouldn't be able to tell you either. And I don't think any of us would unless we've got the notes in front of us. So Boris has maybe got to brush up on a little bit of the detail about what he's going to do, about when he's going to do, about how much it's going to cost. These are all the questions that he's going to get asked. So he's going to give a statement later to MPs, and he's going to get asked all these things. Mm. And I can almost guarantee he's going to be trying to dodge as many of them as possible because he's just not going to know it all.
You think he's a good delegator?
Yeah, I think so. I think, like I say, when he was Mayor of London, he had a big team around him and he did get stuff done. So I think what we've seen in his new cabinet, he's put a lot of good people in, he's put a lot of his friends in. Hopefully he'll be able to sort of leave them to sort of run their own departments and then he can focus on Brexit.
And just lastly, just want to ask you about, he's obviously mentioned 20,000 more police, which I think is fantastic. Got to tell you, I've been not campaigning, but I've been going mad about the fact that we don't see enough police. How's he going to pay for that?
So that's the sort of promise that Sajid Javid, who was the Home Secretary, wanted as well. And now he's going to be Chancellor, so he'll be keen to sort of put that spending pledge into action as soon as possible. Mm. We haven't sort of exactly seen what Boris is going to do in terms of his money. He hasn't said exactly where it's going to come from yet, so I think that's sort of the detail that will be further down the line. But Boris, that was the first thing he mentioned actually in his speech yesterday, police. So I feel like if he wants to sort of unite the nation, win over people back to the Tories, show that he's not going to be just all about Brexit, he's actually going to be focusing on some of the issues that really, you know, normal people like you and me really care about, seeing more police on the streets, I think that might be something that we'll see later on at the budget
certainly,
this year.
Certainly resonates.
That's his first protocol, though, isn't it? It's to sort Brexit out and do exactly what he says he's going to do. Because if he doesn't on the 31st, no one's going to trust him, are
they? No. And
exactly.
Yeah, they're probably going to ask.
He's sort of made all of his premiership all about delivering Brexit.
Yes.
He doesn't
deliver
Brexit, then he's sort of finished.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're going to phone up and ask me and you to do it. And it's.
God, I really hope not.
No. Oh, no.
I've got
enough
work to do already.
No, exactly. Yeah, it's not going to be easy for us. We've got to go to lunch soon.
Yeah.
Listen, Natasha, thanks ever so much. Enjoyed
thanks,
having
Natasha.
You on the show. Brilliant. Natasha Clark, their digital Westminster correspondent for The Sun. Yeah. Listen, we enjoyed his speech. There's good elements about his speech.
I'm a bit hurt.
Go on.
Well, when we mentioned that we'd do it, she was straight down her throat.
Yeah, but she knows.
Well, of course she knows.
She knows. Anybody...
Well, she could have kept to herself.
Anybody... Anybody that comes into work today, when it's 102 degrees, and they come in skiing goggles and a bobble hat like you, should not be sorting Brexit out.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the B and the S, the Bell and the Sperling.
I know, we talk a lot of B and the S.
Well, there you go. Second innings, obviously, yesterday was a bit of a damp squib.
Well, a damp squid, as I say.
That's right.
What is a squib?
Oh, don't ask me about squibs and squids.
Well, I know what a squid is.
Oh, no, you've eaten enough.
Oh, I love them. Love them,
don't you?
Love squid.
There you go.
Calamari.
Calamari. I'm out. It's great.
It's a great line from Sexy Beast.
Sexy Beast. I'm having a calamari.
Calamari. I'm having a calamari. What are you having?
Love
I'm
it.
Having a calamari.
Me and my,
I sound like Mike Reed then.
Me and my wife still turn up in a restaurant and she looks at the menu and she says to me, what are you having? I go, I'm having a calamari. What are you having? It's fantastic. Listen, I saw this situation this morning. We've been talking about Dillian White. Obviously,
he
won at the weekend.
Yeah.
And we were sort of saying, why is he taking certain fights when he is the number one contender? He should be fighting Deontay Wilde. Mm. And that, you know, why is he taking a chance? Now, allegedly, it's come out that he may have failed a drugs test before the Rivas fight. Eddie Hearn has denied this. So we don't know the complete details. White obviously served a two-year ban from boxing in 2012 after taking a banned substance. And he insisted it was unwittingly that he took the substance. We're joined now by David Anderson, boxing writer for the Daily Mirror. Good morning, David.
Morning, you okay, guys? Oh, a squib, it's like a little firework.
Eva, say again.
A squib's a little firework, so that's why I say a damn squib. It's like a firework.
Oh, a squib's a firework, is it?
Of course it is.
Yeah.
There we are. Thank you so much for that.
David, I'm glad you're here.
A damp squib, and it all makes sense.
Of course it does, yeah.
I always thought it was damp squid.
Yeah. Johnny's eaten so many damp squids. listen, we're going to talk about fireworks in a minute. We're going to talk about Catherine Wheels and Rockets. But let's do that after. David, just tell us about, what do you know about this? Obviously, it's come out, it's on a few feeds this morning about this Dillian White situation.
Yeah, it's come out overnight from America, really. And what we think we know is that White failed a drugs test carried out by UK Anti-Doping Agency. And the thing was, his A sample was positive. Now, obviously, over here, usually what then happens is that, you know, until they go and test your B sample, that usually it's kept under wraps. But, of course, he found out about this just before the fight against Rivas. He was informed, Eddie Hearn, the promoter, was informed, and also British Boxing Board of Control. Now, we understand that WBC and Rivas were not told about this. And sort of the reason being, that I say, until the B sample is tested and the results come back, the whole thing is still sort of undergoing this due process, as it were.
Tell us, David, what's the difference between the A sample and the B sample?
Mm. Well, it's just they're both taken at the same time, and then if your A test positive, you can then say, well, I demand that you test the B sample as well. It's almost just to sort of, you know, for clarification, you know, if you sort of say, well, hold on, there was maybe a dirty syringe or, you know, dirty instrument or something for that A sample, whereas if you take a B sample, which happened at the same time, well, then you can say, well, hold on, you know, both blood, urine, whatever it is, you know, have come back positive, therefore you must have failed the test. Whereas if your B one comes back clear, whatever, then you say, well, okay, yeah, you're all right then, really. And I say this due process is still happening, which is why, you know, nothing official has come out yet, really. And I say, if you look at Eddie's comment on Twitter, it's quite specific, because he says that both fighters subject to extensive VADA and UCAD testing for the bout. We know that. Yep. Both fighters were cleared to fight by both bodies and the Boxing Board, British Boxing Board of Control. But he doesn't say, no, he didn't, you know, fail the test or there's anything on Twitter. He's just sort of saying, which we know, that he was cleared to fight by the British Boxing Board of Control and by the testing authorities, really. Because, as I say, the whole process is still ongoing.
But after he wins it, after the tests come back, and if the B sample is negative, then does he lose the fight?
If it's positive.
Well, no, if it's negative, positive, then they can say, well, hold on, I'm okay. There's obviously a problem with the A sample. But if the B sample's positive as well, then you have to look at it. Now, we also need to know what he's tested positive for, because at this stage, you know, nothing's been said. It's just, you know, I think the report from Mary talked about, you know, one or two substances, really. And we saw with Gerald Miller, for example, like he tested probably about three or four things before the Joshua fight when he pulled out. But the joke about this, gentlemen, is that even if, for example, he were to get like a six-month ban, well, we all know he's not going to fight for the WBC title until, you know, next year at the earliest anyway. Mm. So it's almost as if the six-month ban would just take him out for the rest of the year. You know,
is that all it would be, though? Is that all it would be? David, 6 months, is that it? Seriously?
Oh, seriously, that's all it can be. You saw that with Canelo that time, you know, when it's just months. This is what's wrong with boxing, and they don't treat doping offences seriously enough. As you look at athletics and, you know,
it's
sort
cheating,
of some of the balance to be handled down there.
It's cheating!
Is it? Look, I mean, there's different forms of substance. I mean, the old days it was nandrolone and stuff like that,
that's
wasn't
right,
it?
There yeah.
was, you know, there was that sort of thing. But there's so many products now that, you know, I know so many people that train athletes and footballers and blah, blah, blah. You know, there's so many products out there that there may be a trace of something that's in these products, whether they're a weight loss thing or they're a muscle building thing, that I suppose it's hard to keep track of all of them, isn't
it? Wasn't there a thing, just quickly, wasn't there a thing yep. once where poppy seeds, someone eaten poppy seeds about a month ago and it came up in their yep. sample? Do you remember that?
Yeah, you can have all sorts of bizarre things.
Yeah.
And you're right, it is. It's not clear cut at all. As you say, it's all very, very grey, a lot of this area. And as you say, you know, even with certain fights, you have different testing regimes. Like this one had VADA and UCAB, but sometimes in America, they can have, you know, less stringent ones, and, you know, fighters can be taken all sorts, really. But, you know, it's interesting that Mayweather always insists on proper testing. You know, when he fought to make sure his fighters, Anthony Joshua always insists on proper testing for his fights, which is why the Jarrell Miller came a bit of a cropper, really. But it'd be interesting how this one sort of plays out, because, of course, Dillian White, brilliant win, got himself into that mandatory position as a WBC's challenger, and was basically says, look, you're going to get this fight before May 2020. And, of course, if this then comes back as sort of, no, no, you failed, well, then it's, everything's up in the air again. Mm. It's interesting, Rivas has already come out and said, well, I want a rematch.
Of course he has.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So would I. You know, it's yeah. like
so would I.
Yeah, I mean,
and I'd get absolutely pulverised.
And I'd wait till it was out of his system first.
Yeah,
if I'm honest,
of course.
I'd wait till it gone. Yeah, I mean, does this happen quite often? Do you know, being a boxing writer, do you hear about situations like this often?
Well, unfortunately, it's becoming more commonplace, because you've even got this joke. As I said, we talked about Miller, we referenced him. You've now got the situation with Wilder's going to make his next defence of his WBC title against Luis Ortiz, who's already failed a drugs test. You know, Anthony Joshua fought Povotkin back in September at Wembley. He had failed a drugs test, and it's almost like, you know, instead of being the minority, it's almost the norm now where, oh, do you know what? Oh, I've got caught. Oh, well, not to worry. I'll serve my little ban and then I'll be back again. And it's almost as if it's like almost for them, it's like being caught speeding.
Yeah.
And you get points in your license and then they lapse and you just drive, oh, no, I'm still a good person and all that. So it's just the whole problem with drugs and boxing, it's not taken seriously by the authorities. And, of course, because boxing's got such a fractured governing structure with various sanctioning bodies and testing authorities and stuff, you have this piecemeal, you know, bodies govern, and therefore you have this sort of, you know, hodgepodge of sanctions.
Are they almost like kind of step? I mean, I don't really know what they just enhance your strength, I suppose.
Well, there's different ones, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. All sorts of stuff. Enhance your strength means you can train longer, hard, all sorts of things at different times, you know, to fit your regime, really.
Yeah.
I mean, there's certain ones that make you recover from training quicker, so you can train harder.
Really?
But that's what I'm saying. There's so many different ones now, and what I'm saying is the governing body must. It must be hard for them trying to keep up with what they've got to try and ban.
Yeah, and then just to add to that complication, like, he's had that situation where Billy Joe Saunders, you know, failed the test before he was supposed to make his title defence against Demetrius Andrade. You remember back in the autumn, he tested positive in Sheffield. But the thing was, what he tested positive for under sort of UCAD, you know, procedures would not have qualified as a failed test. But because he was fighting in Massachusetts, it decided, its governing body, the Massachusetts State Athletic Commission, says, oh no, we do count that as, you know, an in-competition failed drug. Therefore, we will not grant you a license. Therefore, he couldn't defend his title and had to relinquish it. So, you're right, the whole thing is very, very opaque. And, you know, it does need a proper structure to it. But, of course, that'll never happen because of all the different governing bodies.
And you likened it to a speeding ban, but sometimes you get that letter through saying you can go on the course for 4 hours. You can't really do that with boxing, can you?
That's right. Sit there for 4 hours and I will not take anabolic steroids. I will not take growth, EPO, whatever it is. And, of course, they do.
Of course they do. Just lastly, would the WBC, could they wield the power to strip White of a mandatory?
They're the governing body. They could turn around, as you're right, say, you know, you became our mandatory champion after that. You know, you won the interim title. We're going to take that away, or we're going to suspend you, or we're going to, you know, they have the power to do anything like that, really.
Yeah.
But we all know the track record's so so dodgy. It's, you know, short bands and then everything's all right again. It's ridiculous, really.
It's such a shame because we had Connor Benn in Love Sport last week on the breakfast show, and I think he trains in the same camp and sort of saying, you know, how great Dillian White is. And he was actually saying he's a bad man. You know, he's some fella you do not want to get in the ring with. And, you know, and obviously he won that fight. He got knocked down at the weekend, but he got up and he's won it. And I've been saying for a while, I don't know why Eddie Hearn is letting him take some of these fights, because he's in line for a world title shot, and it could have all gone wrong. And now we're faced with this.
Yeah, no, it is, because it was a wonderful moment for him on Saturday night, because he fought ever so well. Like, I know he's down in the ninth, but the way he got up and finished that round, actually, you know, stronger and on top, you know, he said, wow, what recovery that was. And, you know, I virtually give him every other round apart from that. I thought everything was just brilliant about his performance. And then now when this thing comes out, it just takes all the luster and sheen off it, really.
It's amazing that they don't realise that they're going to get caught.
I know, but it's almost like a calculated gamble. It's almost like maybe somebody who's drinking is saying, okay, right, I've had 2 pints.
That was
at lunchtime. I'm going to drive at 8. I should
be out of the system.
And they do this at the testing where they'll say, right, this isn't a very strict testing regime for this fight. I can do whatever I want. Or they maybe say, hold on, right, this one's in competition. In competition only means the week of the fight. Therefore, I can do whatever I want up to a couple of weeks beforehand. Mm. Then stop taking stuff, which means when I'm tested just around the fight time, my body will be clear.
So
it's as cynical as that, really. You know, where they do look at the testing regimes and see where and when, when it's safe to take stuff and when not to take stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, it's one. Obviously, we've got to remind everybody that it's allegedly
allegedly.
Hearn has denied this. So no doubt we'll find out in the coming days.
Yeah.
David, want to thank you most for telling us what a damp squib is.
Not a problem. Anything else? I am your thesaurus.
Be on the phone.
Just give us a shout.
Thank you, David.
Listen,
is it hot there, by the way? Are you in Ireland?
Yeah, no, I'm up in Cheshire. Yeah, it's going to be very hot. Yeah.
Are you in Cheshire? Oh, that is hot.
No, it's in Cheshire. No, we're down here. It's going to be snowing in about an hour, so interchangeable weather. David, thanks ever so much for your time. Appreciate you coming on. David Anderson, boxing writer for the Daily Mirror. Just to remind you again about this... this situation with Dillian White. It is allegedly that he's failed a drugs test. This was just before the Rivas fight. It's not been confirmed, and Hearn has denied it.
This is Love Sport.
He's right, Donnie.
I was only talking to Donnie yesterday.
Yeah, I know.
And he said...
what did he say?
He said, how's the weather over there? I said, yeah. It's hot.
Yeah.
He said, you still doing skateboarding?
I said, yeah.
Because he was a good skateboarder, wasn't he?
That's how we met him.
Yeah.
That was how we met him.
Didn't we meet him at the Rom Skate Park in Romford?
I think it was.
He was doing a tabletop, wasn't he?
He was doing a tabletop and then a bunny top.
Yeah.
A bunny hop.
A bunny hop. Not a bunny.
That was, no, bunny hop's, what's his name?
That was on BMX.
BMX.
Yeah. Mind you, I think Donnie's a good BMXer.
Yeah, I think. Listen, good skateboarder, you're guaranteed to be a good BMXer.
Yeah,
I think they go hand in hand, the two. Yeah.
I think that's Harry, because he used to wear the crash helmet for a long while. That's why his hair's like that. By the way, I saw your picture on Facebook yesterday, and you've had about 300 comments from people. You were behind the fella with the wig on.
Yeah.
What's
a wig, that
very
is.
Dangerous for you to sit on the bus and take the photo of the fella
sitting
in front of you.
Well, I did it really quick now. I captured it. To keep his dignity...
Mm-hmm.
Just the back of him.
Just the back. He didn't put his face.
No.
One of the worst wigs I've ever seen. That. It's almost like he'd put it on sideways, isn't it?
It's an incredible wig.
Yeah.
And I wish people could see it. If you could.
Well,
see
it's on Johnny Spurling's Facebook.
It's on my Facebook.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
You had a lot of comments from people saying
so many
definite wig.
Yeah.
Why would you wear it?
Well, what? It was so hot as well.
Obviously, we're talking about Donald Trump and Boris Johnson.
Is that a wig?
This is what I'm saying.
What is it?
Both of them look like... If you put Boris Johnson and Donald Trump together, they look like a dated version of Bros, don't they? You know, they're very similar.
Boris is his own hair, though. You can see it.
Okay. Well, we're going to ask somebody now. He's a friend of the show.
Yeah, he is.
He may know whether Donnie has had a comb-over or it is a syrup. Friend of the show, Professor Scott Lucas from University of Birmingham. How are you, Scott?
Well, it's a great day because I'm talking to you folks.
Scott, are you a University of Birmingham, Alabama, or University of Birmingham?
I'm at the University of Birmingham in the UK because I'm hiding and seeking sanctuary from Birmingham, Alabama, where I was born.
No, I mean, did you get your degree, your honor at Birmingham, Alabama, or
they wouldn't have me. So my first degree came out in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah. I remember you telling me you got kicked out of there.
Got kicked out.
Exactly. Yeah. I won't tell you what the charges were, but yeah.
I mean, listen, anyone can go to Birmingham in the Midlands. They'll take anybody there. If you can find your way around that spaghetti junction, then you can get there.
Still working on it, guys.
Listen, just tell us, what do you think this relationship is going to be like with Donnie Trump and Boris Johnson?
Well, you know, I had the perfect image for it yesterday. You know, when Boris was outside number 10 and giving it all the, you know, we're going to, like, show Europe what to do, and it's like World War III.
Yeah.
And he gave that little, like, backwards hand salute to the top of his head.
Yes.
And I went, oh, dude, that's Benny Hill. I watched that when I was a kid. And you remember Benny Hill had that little fella, that little bald-headed fella that
he
ran around and patted him on the head?
Yeah.
So which one's going to pat which one on the head?
Yeah,
that's Trump and Johnson for me.
Oh, I know which one's going to...
oh, dude, all right.
It's Trump's going to be patting Boris on the head, believe me.
Do you think that it does feel like that? You know, like when we hear about... I've even got to say about Piers Morgan. When we talk about Piers Morgan and we talk about Nigel Farage and we talk about Boris Johnson, do you think they are in awe of Donald Trump?
Yeah, but you know, and that's because Piers probably found the only guy in the world who has a bigger ego than him. In terms of Farage and Johnson, well, I'll tell you a story, guys. They've been part of Trump's camp. I mean, Farage, going back to 2016 when he went out and campaigned for Trump, when Trump was in a bit of trouble about grabbing women, and the Trump folks have been indebted to Farage ever since then. With Boris, the story, well, it's a story that leads to number 10, and that is last year, when Theresa May was in a bit of trouble and Trump was coming over here, he and his people got together and said, let's see if we can get Boris into number 10.
Really?
Because Boris had just jumped as foreign secretary. And so Boris's resignation speech in the House of Commons was actually drafted with the help of a guy named Steve Bannon, who was Donald Trump's chief strategist.
Yes.
Because the idea that the Trump folks had, and still have, is they can use Johnson to weaken the European Union. They don't want the European Union as an economic rival to the U.S. Well, here they got a guy who's basically saying, we'll completely, you know, not just take the U.K. out of Europe, but in fact, we will disrupt the EU.
Yeah.
And that means that from last July up until this week, the Trump people have been giving Johnson support behind the scenes, and sometimes openly. So if your listeners want to go back and check it, back in February, March this year, a guy named Donald Trump Jr., noted political commentator, Trump's boy had, like, this full column in the Daily Telegraph saying, what, Theresa May is weak, she doesn't take my father's advice. Oh, you know who would? That Boris Johnson guy.
Scott, can I ask you something?
Oh, yeah, of course you can.
Is Trump after our NHS? What do you reckon?
I don't think Trump probably has a great grasp in terms of NHS and how it works. You know, and unless, you know, he, like, fell down while he was meeting the Queen and needed it. as he was stuffed into that tuxedo that almost cut him off, you know, cut his breathing off. But the fact is that what is serious here is that there are people in the states who really see the NHS as being very ripe for making a profit. And that's because in America, where you don't have national health care, what you have is this whole collection of privatization of services, you know, what we would call trust over here. And that's everything from cleaning to food to transport to the actual, you know, operations in terms of drugs and surgery. Now, without fully privatizing the National Health Service, you can have a lot of its services, which we know are already going out to private contractors, and the Americans are saying, that's us, that's our market. So in any trade deal between the U.S. and the U.K., I think any American administration would probably try to leverage that, but Trump and his people definitely would probably make that a condition of bailing us out of Brexit.
Do you you just said about that Boris is the sort of their guy, if you like, that doesn't give enough power to the Europeans because the Americans don't want to see the Europeans getting stronger. Do you think Boris will have any power going back there to try and change a deal?
No. No, I mean, and again, I will amplify how serious this is. You know a guy named Dominic Cummings?
Mm.
Guy who was behind the Leave EU campaign and is now Boris's chief of staff. Who was he coordinating that campaign with? American people like Steve Bannon.
Right.
Who did they use? Outfits like Cambridge Analytica, the data mine, right?
Mm.
Now, I won't go too far down that path, but you got that side of the story, and then when you have reality meeting the road, is when Boris goes across to Brussels, the EU is going to say, all 27, we made the deal. We made it with Theresa May. It's there over Northern Ireland and Ireland over the backstop. It's there over the trading arrangements for the single market and what effectively would be a customs union. You want to get a deal which protects your economy and which protects the security of Ireland? Mm. It's there. Now, Boris has two choices. One is he either accepts that or he takes us off the no-deal Brexit cliff. And what he's really setting up for, with all that language yesterday, which is like, okay, you know, it's like Winston Churchill 2019.
Yeah, I think he's trying to base it on that, yeah.
Except it's more like Steve Coogan playing Winston Churchill 2019. And that's what Boris is setting up for, and that's what his cabinet choices are setting up for. I mean, Saeed Javid will be there to take the rap, because the economy, and I got to be honest with you folks, we'll go into recession when we hit no deal. But then you got folks like Dominic Raab and you got Priti Patel who are going to be cheerleading this whole idea that England, and I'm not saying the UK, because there's a lot of folks in Scotland and Northern Ireland who don't want to be part of this, that England will be able to stand up against Europe on the outside without a deal. And that's where we are unless Parliament stops it in October.
Mm. What do you think about Priti Patel?
She's certainly
pretty.
A very self-confident woman, isn't she?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, she's very self-confident, yeah.
I will stick it in terms of facts, and that is in her previous post, I think international development, she had to leave the job because she effectively was working with the Israeli government almost as an informal lobbyist. I'm being very careful in my words here, but that she was removed because of a conflict of interest.
I'm just going to switch it over. I just want to quickly, because we run out of time, but I just want to ask you about Robert Mueller testified in front of Congress yesterday. Trump called it the worst performance of all time. Was there actually any damage done to the president with this performance?
It depends on whether you view this as the TV series of the book, in other words, the Mueller report, and whether you look at the plot or whether you look at the lead actor. Right. The lead actor, Robert Mueller, simply was stumbling. He was being very cautious. He didn't want to go beyond what the report said.
Mm.
He was confused at times. But the plot itself, what came out in this is that Donald Trump may have committed crimes, specifically obstruction of justice. That's what Robert Mueller said. Robert Mueller effectively said that the day that Trump stops being president, he can be indicted on those crimes. Mueller said effectively that Trump was unpatriotic in working with the Russians and said that there is a serious issue over WikiLeaks, which, of course, disseminated the stolen material the Russians got to damage Hillary Clinton. So in the actual content of the testimony, to the point where a Republican said, now, are you saying that Donald Trump can be indicted the day after he leaves presidency? And Mueller just said one word, yes. This is damning stuff. The problem is that the lead actor didn't deliver the lines effectively enough. So unlike Columbo, y'all remember that TV show?
Love. Do you know what?
I still
watch it. I watch two a week.
Yeah, there you go. Unlike Columbo, who's that bumbling, shambling person until the very end when he catches the suspect and the police come to take him away.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, Mueller didn't quite pull off a Columbo.
Right. Know.
But there again, Mueller could right at the end could have said, and one more thing.
just one more thing.
My wife.
My wife thinks you're terrific.
Listen, Scotty, thanks ever so much for joining us. As always, friend of the show. Listen, enjoy that sunshine up there. It's about 39 down here. I know in Birmingham you're probably only at about 15. As soon as you get past Watford, it starts raining. enjoy this weekend as well, Scotty. Thank you very much. Professor Scotty Lucas there, University of Birmingham. Boris Johnson has made his first couple of speeches today in the House of Commons. He said that the UK will be the greatest country in the world.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to Bell and Spurling on Love Sport Radio on this freezing cold day. It's -6 out there.
Oh, so cold. I'll put my coat on.
John's put his coat on.
It's freezing.
I hope you've got your scarves, your bobble hats, big gloves. Listen, John. Griezmann, great player. He's grown a strange hairstyle lately. It looks like a shaggy perm that he's got. But he's a fantastic footballer. And Atletico Madrid have moved him on to Barcelona for $107 million.
Cool.
And the French international earlier this summer. Although there is a little bit of a discrepancy.
Yeah.
Atletico Madrid have asked La Liga to block the transfer of Griezmann because there's something in his release clause, okay, that he's not quite right. I think they think that they should get a little bit more money than what they first thought.
Yeah.
Okay. And we are joined now. I'm just looking through it. By Kieran Maguire, lecturer in football finance at the University of Liverpool.
Wow. I'll tell you what, Kieran, if you ever came to work at Love Sport, you'd be like the fifth Kieran.
Yes, because we've got
so many Kierans here.
That was the reason why. I just looked at it and
I've never heard the name Kieran so much. You were thinking it was someone like,
I thought it was
from Love Sport, Kieran or Kieran.
Yeah.
Or Kieran.
I thought we've got so many Kierans here. I thought surely...
But it's Kieran.
It can't be Kieran coming in again. Kieran, just tell us... just explain how this disagreement has come about.
Well, Griezmann had a release clause in his contract which allowed other clubs to put in a bid for him if they offered €200 million. And on the 1st of July, that clause had a drop down to €120 million. So Barcelona waited until the 1st of July and effectively bought the player for that sum. Atleti are saying that they were tapping up Griezmann and they agreed his wages and his image rights and all the other part of the deal before the due date, and therefore, as they'd effectively bought the player, they owe Atleti a further €80 million.
Right.
Could the transfer itself be stopped? Or would Griezmann just be banned for playing for them?
The head of La Liga and Spanish football, as you're probably aware, is very, very political, has said it is one option which is available unless the two clubs can resolve the dispute. As far as I'm aware, Griezmann's registration has been transferred to Barcelona, but La Liga could then step in and say, well, because we're unhappy about the way that the transfer was negotiated, then we're going to suspend it until a resolution is made. I mean, it does seem a bit strange because, yeah, I think everybody's fully aware that tapping up in football has been known to happen in the past.
Of course,
so
yeah.
Why they're trying to make an example of this, I mean, ultimately, it's a lot of money that's involved. It does seem a bit strange. I don't think Atleti ultimately want to stop the player from leaving, because if you don't want to work somewhere, you don't want to work somewhere. Mm. But I think they're just trying to maximise their return from the transfer deal.
How does the La Liga transfers work? Because, as I understand, is it right that the players buy themselves out of their contract? So, am I right that Barcelona would have moved $107 million into his account, then he's got to move it out of his account? I mean, has he got to pay tax on that?
Yes, I mean, the tax issues do become very complicated because we're never quite sure whether VAT is involved or not. But it could be that it's deemed to be part of his payment, his wage package from Barcelona. So therefore, he might have to pay income tax. So that's why the players and the club will all have their accountants and lawyers poring over the small print to try to make sure. I mean, Griezmann will not be a poor man.
No.
Regardless of what happens in terms of this, but the nature.
But you don't want to pay tax on $107 million if it's only been in your account for about 2 hours, do you?
That's right. Yeah, that wouldn't be a good day out, would it? The nature of Spanish football, as you rightly observed, is that the player strictly has a release clause, and it is the player himself who has to pay for that.
Oh, I see.
If he chooses to move during the tenure of his contract. Now, what normally happens is, as you rightly said, that Barcelona will stick the equivalent sum of money in his bank account a few minutes before he pays Atletico, and everything operates fairly smoothly. But if Athletic Madrid wants to be awkward, you know, they will perhaps find some issues in terms of the tax to try to bump up that fee or things of that nature.
You know what he could do? They move the 107 into his account and he says, I don't fancy it now, I'm going on holiday. And he takes the money. Doesn't move it out the other side. Is there actually a chance that Griezmann won't be playing for Barcelona at the start of the season?
Or any club.
Yes, there is. I mean, if La Liga decides that they're unhappy with Barcelona's actions and they deem those to be in breach of the rules in terms of trying to attract players, then they could effectively withhold his registration and put him effectively on a suspension or put the club on a suspension until they're satisfied that the rules have been agreed.
What do you think the outcome is going to be, Kieran?
I personally think that they might give, as a goodwill gesture, perhaps an extra 10-15 million to Atletico Madrid, and they both shake hands and everybody walks away. Atleti feel they have been manipulated on this. Barcelona will of course claim they've done nothing wrong, but normally a little bit of cash can sort of
it normally sorts me out, Gary. Yeah,
tuck it in their top pocket and say
top pocket, here, son.
I know what you want.
Love to mum.
Go and buy yourself an ice cream. Just where are you at the moment, Kieran? You're in Liverpool.
I'm marking exams from home, but I'm in Cheshire. It's pretty warm.
I don't want to Cheshire.
We had somebody else on from Cheshire.
What's the weather like?
What's your temperature at?
I think we're about 31 at present.
That's low.
That's rubbish.
Rubbish, that is, rubbish. Kieran.
Is it? Well, it's northern ways.
What's the matter with you up there? We're cracking around about 38, 39 here today.
Kieran, it's too hot.
It's too hot. Kieran, listen, enjoy.
And this one turns the aircon off.
This one. Yeah, well, you've been out. You start sweating up. You're sitting here. It's freezing cold. Kieran, enjoy your 31 degrees. And thanks for the insight into the Griezmann move. Much appreciated. Kieran Maguire there, lecturer in football finance at the University of Liverpool.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, he could be without a club, couldn't he?
I don't think it could
be clubless.
No, because they would just stop the move. Atletico Madrid would just stop the move. But they're not going to stop the move, are they? Yeah. Let's face it. It's 107 million. Yeah. They think that they should get a bit more. 107 million. Is he that good? Is he really worth 107 million? Have you seen the state of his new haircut? It's embarrassing.
Wow. Well,
it's not as embarrassing as Donald Trump.
If you've got that much money, mate, you have a bad haircut. The more money you've got, the worse haircut it is.
Beckham had fantastic haircuts.
Yeah, some terrible ones. What are you talking about?
Give me Beckham's worst haircut.
The Mohican.
Was it?
Come on.
You think so?
It was ridiculous.
I like the Mohican.
Of course you did.
I think...
It was ridiculous.
Okay, Beckham's most powerful. What about the sarong that he wore? Do you remember the sarong?
Ridiculous.
It was so wrong.
It was so wrong. It is the news, son.
We wrote a song about it.
When our show finishes at 2 o'clock, we walk out to the midday sun.
Yeah.
It's going to be 37.
37.
Go on an hour. Mm. It's 39. Boy.
Is it really? Well, that's wonderful. It's not wonderful because I've got to go to a funeral this afternoon, as you know.
Wow.
And the last thing that you want. And, it's not an ideal day.
You're going to try and get to sleep tonight, folks... 25 at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
I mean, that's hot.
That is hot, yeah.
to sleep.
I might go out and get in the pool.
I mean, I would if I had one.
Yeah. Why don't you go one? Argus.
Yeah,
200 quid. Boom. Pool. Look at you. Drop straight in. Fill it up. Hose pipe ban.
Do you remember?
You would leave the hose running all night.
I would. Yeah. We used to actually rehearse.
Yeah.
When it was hot. In my little paddling pool.
So you had a recording studio in the back garden, and it was so hot in there that you filled the paddling pool up, and we would rehearse in the paddling pool. If anyone was filming us, go, look at those imbeciles.
Yeah.
We was asking you today, obviously it's going to be the hottest day on record. We think it is anyway.
Well, it is now. 39 will be, that is the broken record.
30 bit, yeah. And we were saying that tonight you probably once that... once that sun goes down around about 7 o'clock, starts to dip, and you get that nice warm summer heat that's in the garden, get yourself a glass of wine or a nice beer, and then you will start getting your phone out and you'll go, let's book a week away in a couple of weeks, a nice little package holiday. And we've been asking you, what's your worst holiday that you've had? The only thing I've always had good holidays, but I do remember booking a skiing holiday with me and my girlfriend.
Yeah.
And it was one of these that you go in tomorrow.
Yes.
It was £129.
Yes.
Crystal holidays.
Yes.
And it's
Crystal holidays.
And all it said was...
Just sounds bad already, doesn't it?
£129.
Crystal holidays.
And you're going to go to the Three Valleys. Well, I knew the Three Valleys skiing.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is fantastic.
Was it in Wales, was it?
No, in France, right?
Valleys.
Three Valleys, right? Oh. Courchevel.
Yes.
Meribel.
Yes.
And Val Thorens.
I've been to Courchevel, but yeah.
You have. So they're the three, in my book, it's the best skiing area in the world.
Yes.
And I thought, I can't believe this, £129.
Yeah.
To go to the Three Valleys.
Wow.
So we get on the flight,
yeah.
And I say to the Crystal rep, or whatever, get off at the other end, I said, what one are we in, Courchevel, Meribel, or Val Thorens? She said, we don't know yet. We don't know. You've got to get on the coach from Geneva. And then we'll
take your pick.
And then we get you there, and then we decide. So we get on the coach, and I'm asking the next rep, where am I going? Courchevel's the best.
Yeah.
Are we going there or Meribel? Don't know yet. And we get to the other end,
yeah.
And we get on a coach, and we're on a coach,
yeah.
With six other people. And I said, what one are we going to? And they said, Brie-la-Ban. So I said, where's Brie-la-Ban?
Brie-la-Ban?
It's in the Three Valleys. It's not in the Three Valleys. It's at the bottom of the Three Valleys, okay, about 50 miles away. And there were seven of us staying in this village. There was only one restaurant.
No.
And there's one lift that takes 26 minutes to get you up to where the Three Valleys are.
Really?
I was standing at the foot of it. And I've got to talk to these seven people for a week.
Yeah.
Eating the same restaurant every night.
What was the food like?
Terrible.
You'd think you'd get that right, wouldn't you?
Pasta and pizza.
Being one restaurant in the whole village.
How much conversation could you have the same seven people that you don't like for a week?
Well, hang on a second. Me and you have a conversation every day for 4 hours.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, but we ain't got
God knows what we talk about.
We ain't got to get a 25-minute lift every day up here, have we?
That's very true.
You know,
it's very true.
It's called the tube. We have to stand on the baking tube with a load of other people we don't know.
That is one thing. That's it. Anybody out there who's... Because it's coming up to time that you would start going home. It is for us.
Mm.
Or thinking about it, anyway.
Mm.
I mean, we're pretty lucky that we're leaving at 2 o'clock.
All right, keep telling everyone.
We're not going to be in the rush hour,
no,
are we?
No.
But I do feel for the people who are going to be in the rush hour.
Why have you come in today?
Pardon?
In a pair of Speedos?
Well, it's not.
It's embarrassing.
No.
Was you on the train in those Speedos?
Oh, yeah.
And flip-flops?
Yeah. I wonder why these three people were looking at me sitting opposite me. Rather strange. Actually, to be serious now.
Yeah.
What is it about me that kids find fascinating? I do not know what it is,
yeah.
But I'm sitting there on the train,
yeah.
And there'll be a line of them.
And these were
all Chinese kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were going on a... There was about 20 Chinese people going on a, you know...
And they're staring at you.
All of them staring at me.
Because you've got Speedos on.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter, does it?
I forgot I had Speedos on. No, in all seriousness... Honestly, the whole... And it took longer today. 40 minutes.
The only...
Staring at me.
Only thing...
I don't know what to do.
The reason why is probably they're not staring at your Speedos.
Right.
It's the fact that they're staring at you wearing Speedos with braces on.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
Boris Johnson says the government's mission is to deliver Brexit by the 31st of October. It's his first Commons address as Prime Minister.
Yeah, I'd like to know how he's doing, would you?
Well, we're referencing some of the comments that he's made today. And like I think we said, it was quite a... His speech yesterday was the doomsters and the gloomsters.
Yes.
Anybody who bets against Britain is going to lose their shirt.
And we're going to put broadband in every house.
Broadband in every house.
He loves a bit of broadband, doesn't he?
He does, yeah.
Can he?
He's got 99 days to make this happen.
Apparently, we can't wait for that.
No.
Because Britain deserve it.
They do deserve it. We're also going to talk about Love Island, because I know that you love Love Island.
Oh, I adore it.
It's your favourite.
I wait for it every night.
You do.
I'm there. And what time is it on? 9 o'clock?
Yeah. Well, my wife and my daughter love it.
Yeah.
And
I
the fact is...
I know a lot of men who love it.
We had Marvin... on the show last week, and he came into the studio, and we had a good chat with him. Okay. Now, Marvin got kicked out of the house. Okay. I think he spent about 10 days or so. And we had a chat with him, and I did say to him, I said, why is it that we only hear about the relationship in the house when we watch the programme? Why do we not hear about what you do for a living or what happens at home? Some stories, some of your personal life. And he said, we talk about that all day long, okay? But then it's time to film and we're told to sit there. You say that, you're with her, but it's all planned out. Yeah. And I assume that everybody who's queuing up to audition for this, and I bet the queues are long, think that it's going to be something else. And we're joined now by Amelia Perrin, who auditioned for the season, this season of Love Island. Afternoon, Amelia.
Hi, how are you?
Hello, Amelia. So you see, you decided, you thought, I'll go up to the Love Island auditions. I'll go in there and see if I can get on the telly. Is that basically what you were thinking? I want to be famous. I mean, is that... it is, isn't it?
Well, basically, I just wanted to procrastinate having a real job. Like, I thought, is there any easier way to make money by doing, like, brand partnerships and stuff? And I've been told by loads of friends and family that I should just try it. I thought I'd be really good on TV. So I was like, why not? But it's not as simple as that. I was approached and scouted to do it. I don't think...
Was you really?
You was approached, Amelia?
Is this via...
Yeah.
Like, have you got a decent online following? Because what I've noticed that some of these people went in there, this Anna... one of the guys at the start, I think it was that Sharif, is it? He said, oh, I actually follow her on Instagram. And I'm going, why would you follow someone you don't know? She's not famous. Yeah. And he follows her already. So what I'm saying is, are they picking people that have got a decent, already an online following for some strange reason?
Yeah, I think it is like that. And I think it kind of comes hand in hand nowadays that they want... for want of a better word, they want like hot girls, and the hot girls have big Instagram followings. Mm. That's just how it goes nowadays. They're influencers, and that's who they're picking.
Yeah,
You'd say really, wouldn't you? I mean, if that was men had the big followings on Instagram, which of course they have, but it's mostly hot girls, isn't it?
Essentially, yeah. I think the men are less well known. I'm not sure how they find the men. I think they probably find the men more through the open casting. But I think the girls are more or less all approached or scouted, except for a few.
Why do certain girls build up such a following online, even though they're not on telly, they're not famous, they've not got, not for want of a better word, and I don't mean this to be horrible, Amelia, a natural talent that we've all sort of tapped into. Why is it that they've got a big following?
I mean, why do people want to see beautiful pictures of beautiful women on their screen every day? Why do certain magazines exist? Why do certain, certain internet sites exist?
Yeah. True, though. But you know what? Years ago, though, Amelia, you had to just be a little bit more than a pretty face. You know, you did have... I mean, you did have... I mean, people like... Let's for example... Let's take Olivia Newton-John. You don't remember Olivia Newton-John, do you? She was in Greece.
I'm struggling to remember now.
No, you do. But she was a beautiful, beautiful woman.
Yeah, but she had a talent.
But she had a great talent. Yeah. You see,
it was a different situation. I understand that it's a different situation now, but I'm sometimes thinking that they come out of something, or maybe they're promoting a product that builds up their following. Mm. You know, and that's the reason why I was asking it. Just tell us about the audition process. What happened? Mm.
So the way that I got the scout in the first place was, as I say, my following, they were tagging Love Island in all my pictures, trying to get them to notice me. It was clever, yeah. A producer then got in contact and said if I was really serious about it, I should email over some photos. So I emailed over some photos and a little bit about me, and I just made it about kind of like my tragic dating life. And then I got a call back basically almost instantly, like an hour later, and they gave me kind of a group interview date. I had to audition like everyone else. I had to put through a video and answer questions like everyone else, but it was basically an automatic entry, whereas if you were anyone else, you would just enter and then not know if you were going to get picked, etc. So I knew I was going to get a group interview immediately after sending my application through. Got my group interview, turned up. It was intimidating because I walked into the interview and there's just like another 20 girls, and they were all like beautiful, stunning, like done up, all makeup on. Yeah. But they were really, really nice. And then the interview process was, we just sat with them for like, I was there about half an hour, but it could have been up to about 3 hours waiting for all the interviews to be done. Did loads of paperwork, like so much paperwork.
Oh, really?
What sort of questions did they ask you?
Well, we'd previously filled out the online application, which was more like personal questions, like about your dating life and stuff. But on the day, it was more like to check you were who you said you are. You're not a criminal. It was just so much paperwork. It was like 10 sheets of paperwork, and it could take hours for it to all be done. I was pretty quick. I did mine really quickly and then got in for the interview. But I'm pretty sure girls were there for a lot longer than I was after me.
You sound too clever, Amelia, to be in Love Island. I think that's why you didn't get on. You sound miles too clever.
What about our background has been in the music industry for the last 35 years, so we know quite a few people that have ended up going on The Voice and X Factor and BGT and all this sort of stuff, and they queue up in those lines. Was there any extroverts or look at me, I want to be the centre of attention so that I get noticed and get on the show?
I was actually surprised. I thought it was going to be more like that. Obviously, I can't say for how people were in their individual interviews. As I say, you were talking to the producer on your own. So I've got no idea how these people fared in their actual interviews. When we were all chatting, everyone seemed pretty nice, pretty down to earth. There wasn't anyone that I thought was definitely going to get on the show. And there wasn't anyone that I thought, oh, she's definitely not going to get on the show. Everyone was just kind of neutral. Everyone looked exactly how they are in Love Island. You know, it was quite like... everyone looked a very similar aesthetic.
But do they ask you for a backstory? Yeah. Is there a story that you've got? I'm not being, you know, it's like, is your nan just died? Or like,
you know, do they do that on Love Island as well?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
It's just, not like,
you know.
It's not like Britain's Got Talent where it's like your sob story is going to get you in. But no. I think it was your best dating story is probably what was going to get you in or not. Right. So I told them about
what was it?
The story.
Sorry, Amelia. Sorry to interrupt you. What was the reason you didn't get in?
I don't know. I just didn't get a call back. You know, it could have been anything. It could have
too
been
clever.
Too
clever.
Too clever.
Too clever.
Yeah.
Yeah. You knew where Greece was.
The reason why I asked about the extrovert business is because obviously we had Danny Dyer's daughter in last year. We had our old mate Tamer. We had Tamer on the show last week. His daughter is in there. Tamer-san Bell is in there. And obviously,
I love Bell.
Yeah, she's a lovely girl. And obviously Tyson. In fact, I'll tell you, Tamer's son would have been great in there. Taser, he would have been great in there.
Yeah,
good-looking boy. What about like Tyson Fury's brother's in there? So there's a bit of a backstory with some of them, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's, as you say, you know, they're picking the girls off of Instagram, but like, as we say, some of the men have been more famous, have famous brothers, like Curtis. He has a famous brother.
Yes,
it seems to be they're going to the famous people and then being like, okay, do you have anyone, you know, that's a little bit less famous that
you've
got on Love Island? I think that's how it's working.
Yeah, without a doubt. And it's did you hear what I was talking about earlier? We had Marvin, one of the guys who got let go from the show. He said that a lot of the filming is geared up to just you two sit there. It's a bit staged, and obviously we don't get to hear much about the actual person, what they do for a living or what their background is, where they go. And so I just, it's really strange because at my gym, at the David Lloyd in Chigwell, there, Jack, who was on last year, he was in there.
Oh, yeah.
He was one of the personal trainers there. And now I think he's earned a bit of money, and he's actually just a member now. He's not one of the personal trainers. and then Francesca, who has just got kicked out, I think, hasn't she? She's just left. So she's at the gym all the time. And I'm just thinking, they might as well just go to the David Lloyd in Chigwell and just pick the entire cast from there. You know, but did you know it was going to be sort of... Did you think it like what I just said about what Marvin said, do you think you knew it was going to be staged?
You know, I thought that if I had got in, and, you know, you never know what the cameras are going to show of you, but I always had it in my head that if I had got in, I would be able to, you know what the audience was going to like, was not going to like. I wasn't going to let myself, you know, get too caught up in, because everything in there must seem so intense. It must seem insanely intense that you're there with 12 people and you don't get to have any other outside contact. And I think that that's when people start, you know, having arguments, losing their heads and stuff. And that's obviously what gets shown. You don't know how much of that is staged or not. But I think if you have, like, I'd go in with a bit of a game plan.
Okay, yeah. listen, you're obviously the same Amelia Perrin who was the great Miss Great Britain. You went in for that, didn't you?
Yes.
Right. So just a little bit about that, please.
About Miss Great Britain?
Yes, absolutely.
That was actually just, another sort of accidental fell into it. That was a friend who needed someone to, you know, step in for audition. So I just thought I'd do a friend a favour, audition, and then I won it.
Wow. So are you going to go for Love Island again? Because surely they're going to have you next year.
I would love them to have me, but, you know, I think I was a, you know, you get your one-shot wonder, didn't get in. If they called me up, I'd definitely still go in.
Well,
I'd go in at this point, even, a week to go. But
you're too clever.
I think I've blown it at this point.
Yeah, you're too clever.
Listen, keep giving it a go. I think there's going to be more and more reality shows, and they're obviously talking about Love Island. We're going to have two a year, so Johnny Sperling will have the raving on.
And you're an author as well.
Pardon?
You're an author as well, aren't you?
I'm a northerner.
Author.
Oh, I think I'm a northerner. Like,
sorry. No. You certainly don't sound like a northerner, I can tell you that.
I was going to say.
No, you're an author. What have you written?
Yeah, so I'm a freelance journalist. I write for a lot of different publications.
Right.
And then, you know, it was starting a book and, yeah.
Lovely. Well,
so, yeah, I would love to go on Love Island and show that you don't just have to be a pretty face. But
no, absolutely.
If they want to keep me up, that would be great.
Well, you're a pretty face as well. Thank you very much, Amelia Perrin, and good luck to you in the future.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Amelia Perrin there, Miss Great Britain. We didn't know that until I tweeted it. And auditioned for the season of Love Island and didn't get in, unbelievably. If you look up Amelia Perrin, you will see why it's unbelievable.
Okay, all right.
Don't you think?
Yeah, I just think that some of these reality shows, it's just like what we were saying.
She was too clever, I'm telling you.
It's based on how many followers they've got.
Too clever.
And too clever.
Love Sport.
You've been listening to Bell and Sperling. We will sign out. Thank you very much.